I have always, always been fascinated by weather. When I was in the Air Force, stationed at Amarillo Air Force Base in Texas, Lynn Whitlake, who I've actually had on the show and myself, used to pack ourselves inside a little Volkswagen and chase tornadoes and take video and peddle it to local TV stations and stuff. And, you know, we would chase them sometimes all the way up into Oklahoma. So we were pretty crazy and pretty wild about violent weather. Scott Stevens has been fascinated himself with weather since he began keeping a weather diary for a scouting merit badge. That would have been a long time ago now. A year later, he was reporting conditions in his small town in Idaho to the area TV stations. By his senior year in high school, he was working at KIFI-TV, the NBC affiliate in Idaho Falls, as a studio camera operator, then as a photographer for the news department. Scott went on to the University of Kansas to study meteorology. During his sophomore year at KU, he auditioned for an opening at KTKA in Topeka. And 5 months later, he in fact landed a job. However, it cost him twice as much to keep the job as it paid. Typical beginnings in broadcasting. But 13 months later, he had gone from a 2.5-hour, 5-day-a-week job to being the main guy. That can happen in broadcasting, too. Not long afterward, a phone call came from Omaha, Nebraska. That would be RFD-TV. He also spent a year in the Capital District of New York as the chief for WRGB. In 1996, returned home to eastern Idaho, where he does weather on KPVI TV. So he is a TV weatherman. Is that fair to say, Scott?
That's a fair assessment. That's what I get up and the people watch me to do. So, it's a great job, Art.
Being a TV weatherman, here's something I've wondered about a lot, Scott. Mm-hmm. Do you mind? I've always been curious how much homework and how much prep time a TV weather guy has to put in.
Ooh, that's a good question.
I mean, you only do like, what, 3 or 4 minutes on the screen at best?
3 or 4 minutes, 3.5 is what they tell us. I usually get away with taking about 4.
Okay,
four. That really annoys the producers, but they'll get over it in time.
Maybe 4 minutes. That's not a lot of on-camera time. How much time is required? I mean, is it like a full-time job?
Oh, it's definitely a full-time job because what you need to do is spread out across the course of the day. And thank you for the Internet and the ability to access so much information from home. You can go to work essentially prepared for the day's tasks. And you finalize, and the last minute data comes in, you know, in the 2 to 3 hours prior to showtime. But essentially, you've got a very good handle on what's happening during the course of the day. Now, there are surprises, as we're well aware of, but, 80% of the work is done before you even go in.
What is your, as a weatherman, I mean all weathermen across the country, I'm sure, have similar batting averages. They're mostly working from the National Weather Service information and so forth and so on. So it's not an exact science. We all know that. What do you think is your rough accuracy?
Oof. When we kept numbers, when we kept a log, out about 4 days, I was about 3.2 degrees off on high temperatures. And that was kind of one of the red flags for me, is that accuracy began to slip, even as technology and advances in the science should have stated otherwise.
Ah.
And now at 4 days out, I'm at about 4 degrees error.
Uh-huh. That's only the temperature. I mean, there's a whole bunch of different things. There's whether it's going to rain or be sunny, whether it's going to be partly cloudy, mostly cloudy, or the sun shall shine upon us. I mean, there's all these, and then there's humidity and barometric pressure and all kinds of different variables, not just temperature, right?
That's just the one factor, exactly. And that's the one that's easiest to quantify. And so that's probably why it's done. The other is precipitation. Obviously, it's a yes or no. Did it rain? Did it snow? Or did it not? And so we give a range of values, 20%, 40%, 60%.
How's your accuracy? How's the accuracy? Well, that's right. That's what they are doing these days, a 20 or a 30% chance of rain instead of maybe
yes
rain.
Yeah, instead of yes or no. And with snow out here, they want to know how much. rather than
the
yes or no. And that's not something that's necessarily required when we do liquid. In the warmer months, how much rain are we going to get? Well, we'll just say a couple hours of thunderstorms and then clearing as the day moves on. But when it comes to snow, we need to quantify that. And so that adds another variable that that we try to nail down.
Okay.
Sometimes with success and sometimes not so much with success.
That's right. Well, you're just not your everyday weather man. I mean, look, most weather guys, TV, radio, or whatever, if you were to ask them about weather modification, they go, give me a break, weather modification, science fiction, baloney.
Where's the silver iodide so we can go spray the clouds and do the cloud seeding?
Okay, you began to see an error in what you predicted or the National Weather Service did and what, in fact, happened. At any somehow or another, you began to think the weather was being manipulated. Is that correct?
Well, it was instance after instance where, and it goes back to the winters of 97, 98, and 98, 99, where across the entire country, there were just big struggles in forecasting winter storms any farther out than beyond about 72 hours, three days. And you should be able to see large events coming over the horizon. The bigger the event, the higher it's going to poke its head up over the horizon so you can see it arriving. And those two winters were just tough, Art. And so I began to think that, you know, something's amiss. And that alone opened my mind to go look at some of these fringe websites when it concerns anomalies showing up in the weather.
All right. Some of the viewers of KPVI are probably listening right now.
I hope.
Have you ever mentioned weather modification or weather control on your TV show, doing the weather?
What I'll do is point out anomalies that show up within the satellite or radar imagery. Because it becomes very easy to spot them once you know what to look for.
Right, but you dare not actually say it.
Just last month, you point out square clouds, large square indentations.
Square clouds.
In cirrus overcast across Nevada, and that affected how the amount of snow we got out of a particular storm.
Square clouds?
Yeah, square clouds.
Do you have pictures of square clouds?
Oh, and I'm sure a lot of other folks do, too. And
I don't.
You don't?
No, I don't. Are they on your website?
They're on the website. They're on the website.
I'm on the way.
And that's weatherwars.info.
Uh-huh. I'm there.
And you know, I'm a photographer.
Show me to a square cloud.
Let's go to the best squares. There's a we've got the navigation on the
left. I see it, the best squares. All right, the best squares. I just clicked on that.
All right.
And here we are.
Well, the first picture we've got up.
See a bird.
You see a bird.
Yeah. First photograph looks like a giant bird.
Oh, I must be on a different page.
No.
Best squares and growing daily?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, look at it. Don't it look like a...
Could be a bird. Sometimes it's fun to just lay back in the grass and look at the clouds.
Yes. In this case, though, we're looking for squares.
When we find hard right angles, the capital letter L shows up frequently. And from what I've been able to gather is to align or electrify a portion of the sky to get this L shape, we're actually, in fact, imparting or pushing the flat edge of the atmosphere in one direction. And then we'll tuck in the short side of the capital letter L, and we just impart angular momentum in it. And it's just a process of steering the storms. But it's there all the time.
Okay, I've been going down the page. These are very interesting.
You see the second picture. It looks like a carpenter square. And at the apex of the square, there's another square cloud.
Actually, it does, yeah.
Warmed off of that. And these are just regular summer afternoon cumulus clouds.
All right.
That are forming. And the drier an atmosphere, the easier it'll be to spot these signatures.
And these signatures mean what?
Well, and I mean because a typical cumulus cloud will form, to get a cloud to form in the first place, you need to have two ingredients. First is moisture, and second, you've got to have warm air or lift. And as that warm air rises, that parcel of moist air will rise into cooler air. And in the process of rising and cooling off, will begin to condense.
Okay.
And there will be a point And we call that the lifted condensation level, where you get the flat bottoms of these clouds. Hmm. And along that flat bottom, it's basically the cloud base. And these clouds are not conforming to that basic fundamental process of cloud formation. So to have a cloud, you've got to have lift, or if you don't have lift, then you shouldn't have a cloud.
All right.
And they're just not behaving.
Okay, out there, follow along with us. We've got the link to weatherwars.info, and I'm on the Best of Squares page. So if you're able to get to the Internet, follow along with us. If not, then let's let Scott, before the bottom of the hour, explain what it is, because that's what's important, about these clouds that's not right, where that leads you to believe somebody's got a hand in all this.
Well, what's curious is that we're dealing with a gas or a fluid. And when you're studying meteorology, fluid dynamics, or dynamics is one of the courses or fundamentals of the atmosphere that you need to begin to understand.
Okay.
You can basically forecast. You need to know how it operates. And we don't find squares showing up in fluids and gases naturally, free-flowing fluids. In the old days, we used to call cirrus clouds mare's tails, just mm-hmm. long, straight wisps with a bit of a curl on the end.
Mm-hmm.
And now they have sharp hooks and turn at hard right angles in very, very short distances.
Which means what?
Which means that something is at work. Something is playing in the skies. And I didn't know what it was. And I know there are a lot of other weather people that see things in the sky, and what's pointed out to them don't know how to explain it. And so you have to begin a journey of discovery and figure out, all right, what in the inventory of technology is out there that is capable of doing this?
Oh, and well, there are many possibilities. But, I mean, I guess I want to stick with this. You know, as a weatherman, that there is something wrong. And I'm still not satisfied. Square clouds, yeah, that's not usual.
No, it's not usual. No. And let's go to the next one.
Yeah,
farther down.
Fine.
We're looking at a late July evening in 2004.
What do you want me to... Oh, further down on the same page?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
the best squares, okay.
Stick with this.
Okay.
And these squares will manifest themselves in all kinds of clouds. They can be low-level cumulus clouds, you know, alto cumulus clouds or alto cirrus, or even higher up in the cirrus clouds that we just looked at. They'll manifest themselves in all of those varieties. And it just looks like somebody's come along and taken a stamp and just cut out chunks of these clouds.
Mm-hmm.
And for no reason at all would you expect to see these hard right angles or long...
What running. About wind patterns? I mean, couldn't high-level winds shear and do weird things like this and take something that is, you know, a normal sort of puffy cloud and turn it into something with, as you point out, right angles?
I would love to know how it's done.
So would I mean, yeah.
If that's truly possible, naturally, I'd like to see it simulated and somebody replicate an instance where that occurs.
Okay. How would you imagine it could be done unnaturally? If you don't imagine a natural force that could account for this, what unnatural force could account for it?
We have to begin to look at something, that's invisible. It has to be something invisible that can be displayed or put in the skies to provide these just unusual shapes. And my conclusion was that there had to be some kind of electromagnetics that was capable of imprinting itself on the skies.
Oh boy,
to end up with whatever intent was deemed.
So you believe an electromagnetic force could do this?
Yes, I do. I do. I think that's the only feasible answer, considering the oddities, the odd shapes that show up in the skies. And it's not just squares.
Okay. If this is true, then I would think other diligent, and I don't mean rip and read weathermen. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of those, right?
Yes.
A lot of rip and read weathermen, too.
I want to hear it, but yes, there are.
Yeah. So other diligent weather guys or gals like yourself would have noticed this. Have they?
I think they have. And I think as time evolves and this information becomes more widespread, there will be a lot of, well, I wondered what that was. going on in the weather departments around the country and around the world, for that matter.
Well, maybe there are now, and it's just something that most weathermen would be really quite afraid to approach as a subject. I mean, to even hint that there's a manipulation going on in our sky.
I agree. I fully agree. And it has taken me 6 years to come to that conclusion and have a certainty about it to be able to be here on the phone with you tonight. I mean, a lot of things have had to happen for me to end up here tonight.
Well, I'm sure they have. Have you had conversations with other meteorologists,
oh,
other people in your position? Yes?
Certainly. And it's fascinating to go through and, number one, bring up the topic in the first place, which I enjoy doing, and seeing what the reactions are. And, number one, it's not possible in their mindset. It does not fall within the box that is their belief system. It just isn't there. There are, you know, ways of shooting chemicals and particles into the sky or into the clouds to try to alter a storm in that regard. But the concept of using electricity or ionization to begin to manipulate the weather has just, it's not there at all.
Okay, I'm down to May of 2004. It says, this one just made me shake my head. How's this stuff not seen by anyone with open eyes? And I must agree, this is... has very much, it just looks unnatural to me. It doesn't look natural.
You know, and I took one picture of that formation. I wish now, having gone back and downloaded the pictures from that day's trip, that I had taken a couple more. But it's a phenomenal picture of, I don't know how you describe it. It's a central bar or a central cloud. And then there's a sharp right angle headed west on the lower end of it.
Okay, I can see a little bit, Scott, where the person who processed this photograph put a little bit too much contrast, mm-hmm. Brought up a little too much contrast, but it doesn't change
the shape
of the...
I bring up the contrast,
at all.
First of all, to find out what the high clouds are like beyond it, behind it. And there's actually two darker areas in the center and then in the upper left portion of the cloud where the high clouds simply aren't there. And we'll find that there are holes, pluses and minuses, where it looks like the sky has been pushed and pulled simultaneously, and that gives us a kind of symmetry.
That's a good point.
That shows up in the overcast.
So you actually, as you study this now, but most people don't. They look up and they see a rabbit or a bird like I did at first. You know, but they don't study where there are holes, where there ought not be. They don't study clouds that have unnatural formations as though something has whizzed by them or cut through them or in some way changed mm-hmm. them. That's true.
That's true.
Most people just don't look at that, do they?
There's no reason to. There's no reason for them to because it's all natural. Right? And that's why it isn't done. And
well, that's what we're taught.
It's exactly what we're taught.
That's our upbringing, those are clouds. That's just naturally a random formation up there. That's how we're all brought up by mommy and daddy and our teachers.
Well, and that it's a beautiful manifestation of a natural process.
That's right.
And nature is, in its perfection, is the ultimate beauty. But within that perfection, you can find the hand of man.
The hand of man.
And it's there. It's there. And it becomes obvious because it just doesn't fit in. We get...
All right. Hold on, Scott. Hold it right there. We now are at the bottom of the hour. Scott Stevens, who is a TV weatherman, who is speaking out, and you don't find them very frequently, that is, people like Scott. Most TV weathermen... they would scoff at a suggestion of the hand of man in the formation of some clouds. But you really, really might want to take a look at these. We've got a link at coasttocoastam.com, weatherwars.info. See you there. A TV weatherman who would say, hey, there's something wrong with the weather. Now, this is not exactly the norm. You just don't go out and find TV weathermen who are saying what Scott is saying. So I am curious... how did you get here? What was the process involved in getting on this program to probably make life hard for yourself?
Well, I hope it doesn't make hard. What it could do is put us all out of work. If you think about it, if things are as advanced as I now believe they are, you could have your forecast show up in your mailbox Sunday night for the entire week, and by Saturday have it 95% to 99% accurate. It's just
You think it is that manipulated?
Yep, I really do. I really, really do. And how it came to that conclusion was several years in the making, and just exploring other anomalies that showed up first within radar, because we get these flashes and blooms.
Oh, I know. Let's back up a little bit. I want to know how you got here. I mean, did you... You began a website. I don't think you've written a book yet that I'm aware of.
Oh, no.
But you're a weatherman, TV weatherman. So how do you get from there to Coast AM?
Very quickly. It happened in about 3 months' time, Art.
Okay.
3 months' time. It happened just that rapidly.
There must have been a first step, something you did that got somebody's attention.
I had written Art, what's his name, George Urey, his urban survival site.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a little article about whether there was an imprint within the hurricanes or an intentionality within those hurricanes that affected Florida this past summer.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote back and said I believe there was, and then presented some images showing examples of this scalar imprint in the clouds, in the radar, and so forth. And he posted a page, and it has just snowballed since the second week of October.
Okay.
So it's happened very, very quickly.
All right. So is this all a result of a question that was asked of you that began this line of investigation, or were you on it before that?
I was on it before. I was definitely on it before. I had received emails from people asking about contrails. I had received pictures of odd things in the sky that you try to blame on the mountains. They're mountain wave clouds. Oh, they're this, or there's some kind of lenticular thing. Well, they didn't fall into those categories of clouds.
How do they not? Well, okay. The weather is an extremely complex system, I suppose, only explained by somebody who understands chaos theory or something.
And that's what you have to start with, is the randomness of nature.
Yes.
And then you see the imprints or the local effects of the mountains, the orographics. So we would see lenticular clouds on mountaintops, and then the echoes downstream out of the open valleys. But clouds were showing up with resonances that did not match the local terrain. Nowhere close. And even these lines would suddenly jump a half a resonance. And then where one line would end, the next one would start at basically that exact width next to it. So it's like taking four fingers and taking three and then trying to interlock them.
Mm-hmm.
And it showed the hand of man in a natural process.
And you think this is some kind of scalar technology?
There are probably other technologies that are capable of playing within the skies, but I think this is the one that is the most prevalent. And who and where and when,
That was about where I was going to go. In other words, do you imagine this to be a product of something like HARP that originates on ground in Alaska? Is it a product of something being manipulated by satellite? There have been a lot of rumors of that. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
I think all are a possibility. I think we have to consider all of those options. HARP is, from my understanding, it's one antenna. And what we're looking at in the sky is a resonance or the interference patterns of many. I mean, ultimately, many, many happening simultaneously. So I believe it's far more advanced than just simply HARP. That's a wonderful toy, and I'm sure they're having fun playing with it.
Mm-hmm.
But
possibly satellite. The Russians have bragged they can control weather, perhaps the path of a cyclone or even the creation of a cyclone by satellite.
Well, let's take them at the word and say they can. Let's take them at the word. Because you look at the storms, and as these hurricanes tend to spin up and approach a certain velocity, almost to the limit of what the atmosphere can handle, because it looks like they're being spun up, again, towards Category 5 and beyond, or very close to that limit, they're revealing bars, solid lines crossing the eye walls in an exceptionally high shear environment.
I did see some really weird things with some of the hurricanes that were approaching Florida. Some of the oddest things happened. For example, it actually stopped at one point, and I can't remember. It was, I think it was in the It might have been in the Gulf of Mexico. I'm trying to recall. This last hurricane season, one hurricane stopped in front of an island.
There were so many.
And just made a lateral path and then took off again, as though it was so odd.
It was on a schedule. It needed to stop there and was waiting for the next, you know, wavelength, the next trough coming in from the western U.S. as it approaches the mid-Atlantic. Okay, let's start this hurricane up. We can have it catch this incoming cold front so we can rain out.
Yeah, I agree with you. It very much looked manipulated. But the next question, of course, is why anybody would manipulate hurricanes, spool them up to near Cat 5, and then head them into land where they're going to do a tremendous amount of damage. If we have control of the weather, then why are we controlling it to our detriment? Or is it not we that are under control?
It obviously must not be we. It must not be we. So it's someone else. You know, if this was a tool that had been invented publicly, it would have been used publicly for the public's betterment, the public's good. We would have dealt with these hurricanes, probably brought them ashore in places that needed the rainfall, in a somewhat weakened state, and then provided the rainfall for those parched areas.
Yes, but that's one thing. The wholesale death and destruction that occurred in Florida in this last hurricane season, if it was manipulated by another nation state, for example, would be considered an act of war.
Wouldn't it, though?
Absolutely, it would, yes.
Yes, it would. And that appears to what has happened. The other thing is, what happened after the hurricane? This economy needed a kick,
yes.
And it got one. It got one. We measure our economy, our gross domestic product, the GDP, by cycling dollars through, the flow, the movement of money.
Yes.
And this gave that economy and those areas an incredible kickstart. Yes, there were a lot of tears shed over it, but that happened.
Well, now you're telling an even more convoluted story, or the possibility of one. Now you imagine that we're doing it to ourselves.
Well, I'm not saying we're doing it to ourselves. I'm just saying it's happened.
Well, I doubt.
And that's a side benefit.
I doubt China wants to improve the U.S. economy, just as a shot in the dark.
But
here.
Ultimately, Art, is it? Because we're spending insurance company reserves. Is that healthy?
No, I wouldn't have thought so. But you sort of made the case that it stimulated the economy.
It did. And if you look at the numbers in unemployment area in the southeast part of the U.S., there was an immediate detrimental impact. And then afterwards, the administration was ballyhooing it in the November stats.
I had some fellows on last week. I hope you heard the show on HARP. Did you?
I did not.
You did not?
I did not. This is getting very close to bedtime for me.
I see. All right. Well, they made the case that the HARP project has the ability to heat the ocean ahead of a hurricane. Now, kind of like a Pied Piper, the hurricane would follow the warmest waters,
sure,
was their contention.
Sure.
So they could just sort of Pied Piper a hurricane along where they wanted to go by heating the first little bit of the ocean, the top layer of the ocean, artificially.
You're certainly priming the environment for the arrival of the storm. That's what that process would do. You only have to increase it a degree or two, and it makes a wonderful, I mean, it's a big difference.
Do you have any, is there any way to guess from looking at the effects where the technology would have to be coming from?
From my understanding of this technology, it could be coming from anywhere. It truly could be coming from anywhere, since these waves are capable of being transmitted through solid objects. They're not attenuated by solid mass, so they can be focused above and beyond or through the Earth. It can be done from the moon, for all that matters. It's happening. And what we need to do is recognize that it is and begin to demand answers.
Of whom?
We need answers. It puts us weathermen in a rather precarious position because we're looking at data. We're analyzing what's happening, and there's a missing delta. There's missing information that is not going into the computer models that we need to get accurate forecasts, and that has got to be rectified. And you've got to wonder about the guys back in D.C. or in Silver Springs, Maryland, where that originate much of the information that we look at, if they're aware of it. And my feeling is that they just have to be. And you can read between the lines in some of their technical discussions that these things are going on. When they discuss 3 and 4 standard deviation from normal events.
By the way, a much more mundane item, but the National Weather Service recently sort of overhauled the entire U.S. weather reporting system. And I must say, it's the most screwed up mess I've ever seen in my entire life. In fact, the weather forecast for our area, as called up by zip code, ain't even close to right.
No, it's awful. It's an awful automation process. And that's what they've done, is just try to automate it. It's really bad. The Mets that have to put out these grid points as they talk about it don't like it either.
Well, I called the National Weather Service because I read the weather for my local, my station, KNYE. I read every night I read it. And I finally picked up the phone and called the National Weather Service in Las Vegas, and they said, we don't know what the hell they're doing in Washington. Yeah. So here's a page you can go to, and as I've got a special page I can go to, but they've really got it screwed up, the whole national system.
And something else that they have to do is blend, say, Vegas's forecast with Salt Lake's at the interface of southern Utah.
Sure.
Or with Flagstaff in northern Arizona.
Sure.
And if you've got a forecaster in Flagstaff who doesn't like what the guy in Vegas is doing, they have to hammer out an agreement on those bordering counties.
I see.
And it's not pretty. So one guy can be right and one guy can be totally wrong, but because they have to come to some agreement, they'll both be wrong.
Well, here's what I see. As I mentioned at the top of the show, I'm a weather nerd, so I read what's called the forecast discussion. And in that forecast discussion, Scott, many times they're looking at, for example, 2 or 3 different computer models, and they're trying to make some sort of forecast out of models that are not in agreement with each other about what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. And those models can be in disagreement in as soon as 6 and 12 hours from when they were initially run. And you shouldn't see those separations, that difference between the two showing up until you're 2 and 3 days out. But it shows up sometimes immediately. And oftentimes, even the initializations, so your 0 hour is bad. And so what does that mean? That means you've got to wait for 6 hours or 12 hours before you can run the whole thing over again and try over. So this is information that has to be incorporated within these model suites, and it has to happen soon, because the poor guys back at the Hurricane Center are just pulling their hairs out. You know, and people evacuating when they don't need to evacuate.
There was some of that, yes.
There was, and that's an expensive proposition.
I guess there are some weathermen who know, like yourself, and then others who don't. And that difference is what? The guys who rip and read and the guys who really study weather? Or what is the difference? I mean, do a lot of people like you know?
I don't think so. I really don't think so. I think it's they're very certain of what's happening. They're very certain of their belief system, of what they've been told. If this was happening, it would have come down in some technical bulletin. It would have been presented, or somebody would have done a paper, and it would have been published. Those kind of things would have happened. And it hasn't, and that's how typically information gets within the scientific community. Is somebody goes out, does the research, brings it back, and publishes it. And then sometimes it's peer-reviewed and just doesn't get in at all. So
well, you've got a website up. What's the peer review word in on what you've published so far?
You know, if I was to do that, there would be a big debate. I figured it's just better to put the information out there and let people absorb it.
What I mean is, though, you've had feedback.
I have had feedback, and it's stunned disbelief. Stunned disbelief.
Stunned disbelief. Well, the implication of that is that... They're stunned at what they see, and what they don't, they just absolutely don't believe what they're seeing, or they refuse to believe that
they need time to let it sink in, and they need to go out and then see the geometry in the sky for themselves, and then that knowing happens. But it doesn't happen at once. It doesn't happen in one sitting. It has to be just slowly absorbed, because it's a mind shift. It's
okay, so
having the carpet ripped out from underneath you.
Then as a weatherman, you just said it, a knowing. In other words, you've looked at enough of these malformed clouds to know that there's man's hand in there, and those are manipulated formations.
There's no question in my mind. There's no question. I had that epiphany back on June 7th, and when that epiphany occurred, I got sick to my stomach, and I got chills that just rolled across my body because I understood what was happening at looking at some of this imagery. It just, I mean, the epiphany occurred, and I knew what was happening.
Do you recall the triggering event?
Yeah, it was a satellite picture, and it was it's on the site. I'll have to dig it up here, but
I'd very much like to see that. So when you find it, we've got a break coming up pretty soon. You can direct me to it, and we'll all take a look. I would like to see that myself. But one day you just took a look at a
the geometry in a regular cold front, and it was regular. There were these odd squares at the end of the tail end of this front that just did not match with terrain. And when I saw it, I knew that if one boring little cold front in early June was being altered, then that meant it all had to be. It was yes or no. And that was the yes moment for me.
Okay. Do you think the U.S. is doing this? Do you think there are other countries doing it and we are not? We're just the victims of it? Or
no.
What?
I think, from my understanding, is that there are 20 entities, not countries, but entities.
And
there are countries included within that header, entities that do this, and they all have their agendas. They all have their different ways of play. You give an 8-year-old boy a BB gun, what's he going to do with it? He's going to play with it. He's going to use it. And once this is, discovered, it's going to be played with. It's going to be experimented with.
And that's what's going on out there.
That's what's happening.
All right, Scott, hold tight. We're at the top of the hour. A TV weatherman named Scott Stevens is my guest, and he's saying there's no question about it. It's our weather. It's being manipulated by man's hand. You know, Scott, there's always a danger in speaking out. I guess you realize that, don't you?
Well, I suppose there is.
Yeah, there is. You know, there is. Especially on something like this.
You know what's encouraging, Art, is that people are the ones emailing their local weathermen. They're the ones trying to get us to pay attention. And they're not. They're not. And that has to change. They need to realize that, okay, something isn't amiss, or something is amiss. I'm not as accurate as I'd like to be. Storms are not behaving. We're getting additional lift, or we're getting three tornadoes out of one storm.
Mm-hmm.
That we're having, extra strong this or too many those, or the drought is not right, or, clouds are moving the wrong direction. The wind field is not matching with cloud movement. There are so many things that are signs, that are red flags.
Okay, let's talk about those a little bit. Fine, let's talk about them a little bit. Clouds, you said, for example, that do not move with the wind patterns. Now, that seems impossible.
Put up time lapse. And you can verify it two ways.
Okay.
We call it a VAD profile. You take the Doppler radar as it scans the sky in the area, and it'll give you wind movements as it detects particles, be it moisture or birds or dust or something reflective in the atmosphere, and then you can get a good idea of which direction the winds are moving over a certain period of time. Put a camera up and look at the same area and watch the clouds grow.
All right.
They don't match, Art. They just don't.
They don't match. Which means there has to be manipulation. There's no other.
There's some other something else playing. There's something else there, and that's the point. That's why this is happening, is that we've got to discover what that is, and everybody's got to come into that knowing or an understanding of what it is so they can do their job correctly.
You mentioned there was this moment when the light bulb went on for you. Is there anything on your website? Did you preserve that photograph?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Right-click, save.
Okay. Where?
We go into visible satellite imagery. Satellite imagery under phenomena.
Under phenomena. Okay. Is that on the left-hand side of the main webpage?
That's on the left-hand side. It's the 1, 2, 3, 4th link down. Satellite imagery.
Oh, okay. Got it. Satellite under phenomena. Okay. Satellite imagery, and I am there.
And we load many different examples. I think I've got about 12 of them on this page, and I'm looking at the eighth and ninth ones down.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
It's two pictures together, and the date is June 7, 2004.
Got it.
Southern Montana, eastern Idaho, northwestern, I guess it should be Wyoming.
Okay.
What I was looking at was the cold front working through southern Montana. And
yeah, you can actually see it.
You can actually see it.
Right.
And towards the end of it, it comes to just a sharp endpoint, which is fine. It looks like a phonographic, a needle that we used to, those old archaic things called LPs or vinyl.
Right.
But, you can see how the clouds are simply notched at regular intervals.
I do.
You see how about every 4 kilometers, every 4 or 5 kilometers, they're just hatched. And it's the regular interval. And when you begin to climb up from the back of that cold front, there is an opening or a large square. And where that opening begins, the clouds are shifted exactly 90 degrees.
Oh, I do see that.
The cold front moves north. The clouds realign themselves north-southeast or north-south. And then the front continues on.
All right. When you're doing the weather on TV,
mm-hmm.
and I take it you present these sorts of images to your audience, right?
But I haven't pointed them out.
Okay.
Not all the time.
After
doing this show, I have to.
Yes.
It changes everything. And over, follow the northern border of Wyoming, and across the valley that includes Billings, Montana, there's a perfectly square cloud.
Okay.
It's over towards the east central or the right central portion of the image. Do you see the square cloud and the square shadow below it?
I do.
It's almost as if it's been cut out.
In fact, actually, it's almost exactly square. That is bizarre.
Exactly. Exactly.
So there's nothing, in other words, normally, meteorologically speaking, there's nothing that would or could create an exact square cloud like that?
Not in that terrain. Not in that terrain. And that's not the only anomaly on the picture.
It is weird.
There are many other anomalies in that image that if you just sit and look at it, the geometry is just wrong. These thunderstorms are not lighting up. When we heat the afternoon day, we begin to see thunderstorms billowing off the tops of mountain ridges. I mean, that's how it's supposed to work.
Right.
That doesn't happen. It doesn't happen like that anymore. They're close. They're close. But they don't have the grid that controls the weather matching the terrain just right. They're close. But you can see where they've made mistakes. And it's this way day after day after day. And after this Sunday afternoon in June, I looked at this imagery much closer and began to save every picture. And as you look at literally thousands of them, there are all kinds of shapes, symmetry, circles in circles, circles in squares, triangles inscribed in circles, circles inscribed in squares. All of these things that are far more a hyper-dimensional physics kind of thing rather than convective signatures.
All right.
We would like to see.
We've been taking pictures of clouds, human beings have, since we've been able to take pictures. So it seems to me that you could go back. We might not have had satellite imagery all that long, but you could go back and see if you found things like this at a time clearly before we could have had the technology to manipulate the weather as a control for what you're claiming we're seeing here.
Exactly. And that's work that needs to be done. That's work that I'm hoping you have listeners that have access to some of these old pictures, whether they're in county libraries, newspapers. You know, these things need to be scoured so we have a baseline. What I enjoy doing is watching the History Channel, or I love Discovery Wings. I'm an airplane buff.
I'm a Discovery person, too. I love it.
And looking at World War II footage for the clouds, especially the color stuff.
Yes.
And that's at least one avenue where you can begin to see something that's normal. Because as I have delved into this farther and farther, oh, that red pill just doesn't end.
Mm-hmm.
This has been going on as long as I've been alive. So I don't know that I've ever seen a time when clouds were entirely natural. And it just kind of leaves you a little woozy inside, knowing that what has been promoted as natural, and I mean, all of these bad weather events happening and people praying to God, praying, you know, for an end to the drought, for an end to the rain.
Yes.
And it's not in that hand.
You are, in fact, experiencing a drought, I believe, in Idaho, aren't you?
Oh, we're in our sixth winter of drought.
Uh-huh.
And let's roll up on this page because there's a wonderful example, and it's the second picture down.
All right.
Of how droughts happen. And it's a simple theft of rain. We have storms come through. I'm sure the frequency of the storms is similar to what is natural. What is unusual is the intensity of the storms
mm-hmm.
that are not leaving rainfall.
Yeah, I'll sure buy intensity of storms.
Well, and that intensity is focused in very small places rather than being spread out over the western edge of the continent or the full breadth of the storm. It's focused. And so large swaths of area are receiving less rainfall out of a said storm than they would otherwise, while others will get 2.5 times normal rainfall.
All right. I'm not a weatherman, but most weather here moves west to east generally. So if you wanted to control the weather for the West Coast, you'd be working out in the Pacific Ocean. If you wanted to control it for the East Coast, you'd probably be working with formations and systems in the west mm-hmm. or the southwest.
And you begin in the Pacific, and you essentially trap the jet stream. And once you trap the jet stream, and if you know and can manage, and what happens when you heat? You use this energy to heat a layer of the atmosphere. What happens when you heat a gas? It expands. And as it expands, it exerts pressure on the layers above and below. And as you gently add pressure farther upstream, to guide a storm in a certain direction, you're going to limit its movement in that direction you're trying to guide it to. And it becomes a relatively simple process once you understand how to do it. And so the entire jet stream can be trapped and captured and guided. And
well, certainly, I think even casual watchers of weather pretty much know that the big weather seems to be pushed and controlled by the jet stream. Is that an accurate
mm-hmm.
representation?
Oh, sure.
It is. Okay.
In these latitudes, in these mid-latitudes, that's the primary factor in driving storms across the country and indeed around the whole hemisphere.
So where the jet stream goes, the big weather follows.
And where the jet stream disappears and you get stagnant, you get fog in the valleys, you get inversion, or you get drought. But this second picture on this page,
is that the one marked October 17th?
That's the one.
Okay.
And in the center of the picture, there's just a parallelogram or a square, a rectangle, tilted on its side about 45,
God, I see it.
50 degrees.
Oh, I see it. So clearly I see it. And it's taken what should have been, that's really odd. I must admit, that's really, really odd.
Yep, and see, that should have been a continuous band of showers. And that was a Sunday afternoon where I had expected quarter to a third of an inch worth of rainfall.
I want the audience really to get here, so let's explain once again, please. We're at something called visible satellite imagery. You go down the left-hand side of the page until you get to phenomena, and then, is that correct, and then visible satellite imagery? Yes. Click on that,
imagery.
And the second picture down, first it doesn't hit you, and then all of a sudden, boom, there it is. It's a large, I would call it rectangular area, bereft of the weather that is all the way around, everywhere else. It's like somebody took a giant... How much land does that represent?
I think we're looking at every bit of about 110 miles long by about 60 miles wide.
Is there anything in the geography of the area, an obvious question, that could account...
I'm laughing.
Well, I'm sorry. What else can you ask?
Yeah, because that's the explanation you would like to come to, is that there's a geographic, a local orographic reason for this, but there is not. And we go from west of Salt Lake, which is wide open desert, and then across the Salt Lake, across the mountains that border the Bear River Valley, and into southern Idaho, and it's fairly high terrain. And there should have been a half or greater rainfall in those mountains.
This picture has under it October 17th, 2004, 22:15 Zulu, 4:15 p.m. local, southeast Idaho / northern Utah. And I'm telling you, folks, this one I absolutely buy. Something happened here. Now, Scott, are we seeing actual weather control here, or are we seeing an artifact of weather control?
Either way, the effect
is hard to know, huh?
Yeah, it is hard. But you have to look at this, and it's intentional.
Yeah.
the weather is so unusual. We've had so many bizarre events happen. That 3 and 4 standard deviations from normal, which are 300, 400, 500-year events, that the weather is displaying intent. And this is just a simple example of intent being displayed in the weather.
I would almost say it's impossible. What I'm looking at is impossible.
Yes. It wouldn't happen any other way.
Did you show this to your TV audience?
This was a Sunday, and I have Sundays off. So
I see.
But what we do on TV is we loop. We loop, but we loop.
That's right, yes.
Uh-huh. And so you don't see the shapes when you're animating these frames at 10 frames, 15 frames,
oh, you're
30
right.
frames a second.
You're absolutely right, and almost every TV weather person and station does that. They put it into a loop so you can see the movement of the system, but you never see the still photographs like you're seeing right here.
We forecast from the trend and not from the specifics.
Where was this photograph taken from?
This was taken from the GOES-10.
GOES-10, okay.
GOES-10, yeah.
Yeah, we've got, I think, 2 GOES satellites for the U.S., one for the east and one for the west. Is that correct?
10 and 12. 10 is west and 12 is east.
Yeah, there you go.
Is
folks. All right, so there you go. And this photograph is impossible.
Yeah.
It's not possible.
There are so many, and there are these kind of shapes. When Hurricane Ivan was coming ashore, Art,
oh,
there were these squares punched out of the southern eye wall of that storm. As it came ashore in Alabama, in the far western panhandle of Florida. As that storm came ashore, that whole southern eye wall collapsed just hours from landfall.
A matter of fact, we all saw it.
Yeah, we did.
We all saw it. And I can't tell you how many emails about that I got. Everybody said, that's not natural.
No. And that was this technology. And I'm kind of thinking that was our guys beating down that storm so we didn't have any more flooding than we already did up through the Appalachians. I mean, they had already had a torrential summer, and they just didn't need another storm, for goodness sakes. And so it was nice to see some of that rained out.
Well, listen, the title of your webpage is weatherwars.info, right?
Right.
Weatherwars.info. So what you're saying is, you said that was our guys, the ones that clobbered that hurricane. Now,
I'm hoping it was our guys. I'm hoping.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm hoping.
Or it was a good deed done by somebody else. Who knows? But anyway, it was in our interest. There's no question about that.
Definitely.
And during the time that hurricane was stopping, you saw the same kind of anomalies that we see here?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, as the hurricane came ashore, you're looking at an incredibly potent storm with the center. It's like being on a merry-go-round. And there's just this unusual geometry, these squares. And I think I've got that picture of Ivan as it comes ashore. When we go to the – I'm going to look here real quick to see if it's there. Yes. We go to the bottom of this satellite page that we're on, and there's a link to page 2 of the visible satellite imagery.
More satellite imagery, it
yep.
says. Okay.
And this picture of Ivan is the last one on the second page.
Okay. Down I go, and there it is.
Titled September 1704, 1515.
Holy Zulu. Crap. I see it, folks. All right. He's got Ivan. This is as it was already on shore,
yep.
right?
Yep. It was the next morning.
The next morning. Okay. And you have delineated in yellow the mm-hmm. exact same kind of areas.
Mm-hmm. Where you can see just north of Atlanta.
Yes.
Yeah. Where it's just been punched out.
You sure can.
And that's these guys at work.
And you think that's... All right, what would you... Assuming that with scalar technology of some sort, mm-hmm. you could do what we see right here, what effect would that have on a hurricane onshore like that?
Well, in this case, it was the function of weakening it. You're disturbing the airflow around the center to slow it down. You could have the opposite effect if you basically turned the mode around and you could stimulate the storm so it remained much stronger than it would be otherwise, because the energy is going to be dissipated within friction on the ground and the absence of its source, which is the warm ocean water. So you could replace that source of energy with this technology to keep the storm going longer than it would be otherwise. Or you can do as what we see in this case and begin to shoot holes into it.
Scott? Who are we at war with?
What if it's ourselves? What
well,
if it's
Well, then that would be nothing new.
True. I mean, but we're at war with somebody. We're definitely at war with somebody.
So there's somebody attempting to manipulate one direction whilst we attempt to manipulate in another direction. Is that right?
20 entities with 20 different agendas.
Uh-huh. It was one of the military services, I can't recall which not long ago, suggested by, what was it, 2050 or some year like that, they would own the weather. That was our military. So I wonder if we've taken, you know, partial possession of the weather already. You've got to see these pictures that Scott is talking about. Then all of a sudden the light begins to go on as you see these squares, these manipulated bits of large systems. We'll be right back. I think the average person just following along with us this evening and looking at these images would have to agree there's nothing at all natural about what we're seeing. There is nothing natural, and I guess that's what occurred to Scott, and I hope you have been following along. If not, then when you get home, you can find weatherwars.info and look through some of these photographs that we've been looking at, and what you're going to be looking for is what we've seen, these square, unnatural areas where obviously a weather pattern, in some cases a very violent one like a hurricane, has been subjected to something. In other words, there is something going on, and if it is a war, Scott, then what good is it? I mean, there, we have one group trying to do one thing, another group, as you put it, trying to do another, and in the end,
think about the potential. If you had this technology and had very nearly mastered it,
yes,
what doors would be open to you?
Most of them.
Yeah, exactly. Most of them. You would have people knocking at your door. I need this. I need that. Please do this. And so forth. But let's just look at the financial aspect of it.
Gigantic.
Yeah.
Monstrous.
What if you knew there was going to be a freeze in Florida 3 weeks ahead of time?
You'd get those oranges protected or harvested, one of the two.
Or you buy orange juice futures.
I mean, whatever.
Or coffee. Well,
that's true. Oh, that's all true, isn't it? So
and petroleum and natural gas distillates. Think of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. There is untold potential for income when you're aware of what's going to happen well ahead of the herd.
So even not on a full global scale, but even just regionally, you could make a killing.
You could. And think of what insurance companies could do if they were to know ahead of time.
Yeah, think of it.
Yeah. It's kind of scary because this has been a topic, a subject that has just been left alone. Okay?
But let's say you made the assumption, Scott, that insurance companies that were affected mightily by the hurricanes in Florida, I mean, they were just crippled, right? So they're one of the big money people in the universe, insurance companies.
And they would want to know.
And well, they would want to not suffer a gigantic hit, so they would have every interest in the world, and those are considerable interests, in affecting a hurricane to hit somewhere else.
Exactly. So there's going to be conflicting interests at play no matter what you do.
Well, last season, though, hurricane-wise, we saw a lot of really weird things. For example, we saw storms that were not supposed to build to the category they did in the short time between when we saw them and then when they hit land. It was short indeed, and it suddenly one of the storms suddenly built like crazy, another one fell apart.
Yeah. Was it Florence that kind of stalled off the coast of Florida on top of Freeport?
Yes.
Bahamas,
oh, yes.
And just became this monster 90-mile-width eye beast as she just churned in that area. And she stalled waiting for the next storm to come in from the Rockies to scoop her up and give her the next next direction.
It's true.
Slow it down, wait for the storm to come in from the west, and then we can mate the two and have a nice little rainer along the East Coast.
Uh-huh.
And you focus summer after summer of these heavy rainfalls pouring off the East Coast, and then you begin to affect the ocean currents flowing northbound through the Gulf Stream. We're dumping incredible amounts of fresh water into this Gulf Stream.
I wonder if we're the recipients, for the most part, of the benefit of control of the weather or the victims.
I think we're the victims. I really do.
You do?
Oh, I do.
So then you obviously must feel that there are groups that don't have our, as in the U.S., best interest in mind.
I think that's the case. I really do think that's the case, because if they did have our interests in mind, we would have fewer tornado incidents per year. We would have fewer of these storms. We wouldn't be contending with 500-year droughts. Mm-hmm. We wouldn't have these big flood incidents. Poor Europe and Croatia, and they've had some incredibly violent weather.
Yes, and for the most part, it doesn't make news here occasionally, but for the most part, not.
No, it doesn't. I mean, if we had even 3 minutes nightly dedicated to our environment, we would have much greater awareness of what is happening in other lands on this planet.
Scott, where does all this fit in with, perhaps fit in or not, with global warming?
That's a big question, uh-huh. And I think that's one that needs some serious attention, and it needs to happen very quickly. Because of this weather modification happening,
yes.
I don't think we have an appropriate baseline to see how big or how severe global warming truly is. And indeed, is it warming at all because of this project? So much of the warming has happened within the last 30 years, which corresponds with the activity that's been happening with this technology.
But I sort of asked you that before, and you said, well, that's going to take a lot of research. And now you're saying that about 30 years, there's a point where you can see this technology beginning to emerge in our cloud patterns, in our climate, in our whatever, right?
We use 30 years as normals. When we go and say, all right, January 30th, normal high is 37 degrees. We compare that to the previous 30 years.
Oh, I
see. Not to the previous 100 or not to the previous 500 years.
Okay.
So this what is normal is the most recent 30-year stretch of time.
Gotcha.
And that may not be a wise baseline to use. And when we look at the Arctic or these higher latitudes and discover incredible amounts of warming, you have to wonder if it isn't because the Earth isn't allowed to do its own thing.
Well, if you look at pictures of the Arctic, 10 years ago even, and now, or 50 years ago and now, mm-hmm. You'll rock right back. I mean, the amount of ice gone is astounding.
It is. It's phenomenal.
And then the southern part of the world, where a very similar kind of thing is happening with the Ross Ice Shelf, for example, may not even be stable. They're now beginning to learn, and of course it's above the water, so it would have great impact should it melt.
And I've read papers discussing and basically saying that much of the warming happening on the planet is not so much in the atmosphere, but more so within the oceans. And as these oceans are warming, then that heat is beginning to work into the atmosphere and hence into our daily lives through that method. And when you look at sea surface temperature anomalies, and the Navy's got some nice sites for those, the higher latitudes are consistently 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 degrees warmer than what is used as the baseline. And so that means it takes longer in the winters to ice up. It melts off much, much quicker earlier in the season. So we are seeing warming from that happening in those higher latitudes, and that will affect the ocean currents. It will dramatically affect the ocean currents when we look longer term. Even a generation down the road, I think we're going to have to do a post-mortem on this issue and assign some blame.
What do you think it would take for the public to become generally aware, or the American press, that what you're showing me here tonight is the case, and in fact weather modification is going on, not laying it at anybody's doorstep, but just making that one jump, the one jump that you've made, that, hey, look, it's being screwed with.
That's why I'm here, is that I want that awareness to happen. I want some of the responsibility for the missed forecasts off our shoulders. Seriously. I mean, there is a bit of a selfish tint to that, because I'm tired of being wrong for the wrong
reason. Tired of being wrong. No, I
it's not my issue. Well, several times we had we get into the summer monsoon. It's been awfully short these summers, but we get the moisture coming up from Mexico through Arizona and Utah.
Yes.
Dew points go up in the summertime.
Oh, I get plenty of it here.
Oh,
yes.
You do.
Yes.
But these storms will not cross certain boundaries. They just, it's like they can't break out of a box. And where I live, we're on the edge of one of those boxes.
So am I.
And frequently, they approach the city and approach the city. All right, guys, you know, when you're now casting and looking at the Doppler, here it comes, it'll be 30 minutes.
Uh-huh.
It never gets here. And then you go outside, you look at the thunderstorm, and you begin to see this herringbone pattern as it runs into this edge of...
Of what?
I guess an electrified cube. Because what I've come to, basically just by inferring from radar and satellite information, that there's this matrix. There's the whole Earth's weather has been digitized. And we find these little squares overlaid planet-wide of various depths, of various widths. It's all programmable. It'll do what you need it to do.
Let me ask you this. NEXRAD, the NEXRAD radar system, there's been a lot of controversy about that. A lot of people claim to have seen abnormal things in the NEXRAD images, right?
I've seen them. And you have to go through, and when we're presenting those radar animations to the public, you go through and delete what we call bad frames.
Bad frames.
Bad frames, it's what they are. And so you go through and pull it out, you get a little jump. But
can you delineate between bad frames and abnormal frames? In other words...
You know, I've come to kind of believe that there are no bad frames. It's information
really?
That we don't know how to interpret or are not given the tools to interpret. That's what it is. It's data, and we're throwing it away rather than analyzing it. And...
It's kind of like people who deal with photographs of Mars and elsewhere. They complain about bad parts of strip photography and bad frames and all the rest of that sort of thing. It sounds very much like that.
So you throw out the baby in the bathtub with the picture. It's just all, we just don't even look at it. And that comes back to the animation thing. The best data, slow it down, look at it bit by bit by bit. And there's a whole different world there. It's a very different world, and I would love to be able to sit down and look at the satellite imagery like today. I would like to have seen pictures from south of Houston, outside and southeast of New Orleans. I would have liked to have seen in and around the Black Hills. The Black Hills, there's odd stuff that happens in and around there. It's like the clouds just are not allowed to form.
So there are certain areas where this is happening more than others.
It's constant. It's constant, yeah.
But hotter areas, so to speak, where there's a lot more manipulation occurring, is that right?
I believe so.
And those areas would be?
Well, as I've just said, today it was the Black Hills. And portions of the Texas Gulf Coast that should have been cloudy were cleared out.
So you're speaking of they being able to manipulate anywhere. I guess I was trying to ask, are there certain areas where it's constantly manipulated or...
Everywhere.
Are they able... Yeah, everywhere,
everywhere.
Huh?
It's an all-or-nothing proposition. You can really tweak areas, but to control the big systems, the big events, it's much easier to do that when you have a grasp of the entire process. And that was the epiphany that I had back in that June, is that if the small events are displaying these signatures, then the large events are... as well, and that it's 24/7, 365.
Well, if they had this ability, you'd probably, as a TV weatherman, be the last guy to know. In other words, there would be motivations that would be far, far ahead of getting the weather right.
We're at the bottom of the food chain. We're a user of the data. Oh,
yeah.
Seriously, we're a user of the data. You know, and there are many other people that have far better data, far higher resolution, more frequency or more spatial resolution, where you can get time steps that are more than every 30 minutes or more than every 15 minutes. You know, we're an end user, and so we don't get the best stuff. And the stuff that I'm showing on the website, I even have to go out and buy and subscribe to a service to be able to inspect it.
What about the management of your TV station, KBVI? Have they...
they're aware.
Have they ever brought you in? Have a seat, Scott. You know, this website has come to our attention.
Oh, I made it at attention before it was up. You know, my news director is aware of it, and I'll show things to her that are unusual. And I carry a camera around with me for the last three years, and I share the odd pictures. You know, when I have scout troop comes through and we're talking about weather.
And how does your program director respond to this? You know, I mean, is it like, sure, Scott, that's cool?
The truth is the truth, Art. It is what it is.
But I mean,
whether you believe it or not is irrelevant.
When you really lay this on somebody, it's pretty seriously convincing. Let me put it that way. I hope a lot of the audience that's going to call in the next hour has had an opportunity to look at these websites,
yeah,
or this website and these photographs. Really, it's odd. And
what took me so long to come out is that when you visit the other weather modification sites and with the anomalies, there just isn't the understanding of the meteorology, those processes, the meteorology behind it. So the terminology is bad, the assumptions are bad, and that's probably what took me the 2 or 3 years to, all right, Scott, let's bring it all together. And then that just happened this fall and over the winter. But once it's laid out in front of you, we're beyond a reasonable doubt. You're beyond a reasonable doubt.
How should we proceed, do you suppose, Scott? Do we want to discover who is doing this, why they're doing it? How do you go from where you are now, knowing it is so, to finding out who's doing it and why?
That's not in my hands. It's in the hands of the listeners. They're the ones that have to get the answers. They're the ones that have to put the power behind the information. It's always in the public's hands. There's always somebody that'll come up, share some information, and that's often where we have to leave it. It's left up to everyone else to decide what to do with it. And it'll affect everyone differently. So we can't be lumped together, but it's going to have an effect. And I fully expect that it will revolutionize the weather industry. It has to. It simply has to.
So you think
we
this could be
that.
Coming from ground stations? You think it might come from satellites or from all of them?
All of it. All of it. And somebody knows. Somebody is listening tonight that knows. And that information needs to be shared with us. And that's why I'm here.
Well, Scott, these are lower systems. These are atmospheric systems. And I'm here to tell you, because I'm not an expert in anything except maybe the shortwave bands, the use of the shortwave bands. And baby, I'm telling you, there's something wrong with the ionosphere.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to keep screeching this from the mountaintops, mm-hmm, till somebody pays attention. But higher up above that which you deal with, there's something wrong with the ionosphere.
Well,
profoundly wrong, Scott.
And then how it interfaces with the magnetic system of the Sun-Earth relationship.
Right. All of that, it's complex, and I don't know. I can just tell you that watching it for all of my life, there's something wrong with that layer, mm-hmm, of our atmosphere, the ionosphere. There's something wrong with it. And it's not behaving normally, and you're telling me that either is this. Now, I wonder if what's controlling that which you see has to first come blazing through the ionosphere.
It sure could. Or have the ionosphere as a mode of delivery, you know, to get to the destination.
Yes. Yes.
You know, it's an amazing field. And once you begin to understand it and see the potentials, you're just left shaking your head. Because the foundation for the science is a century old. It's been in our face for so long. And it's kind of surprising that it even took until the 50s, 40s, and 50s for the technology to be developed and then shortly thereafter deployed. But that the basics, the fundamentals, the theory has been laid down the better part of a century ago.
All right, let's try this. Where are you going with this, Scott?
Where am I going?
Here you are on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, great. You've laid out your case, and it's a good one, I might add. But where do you go from here? Now, do you lay it in other hands now and say, here's what I found, you take it from here, or do you keep going?
What I would like to do is have the listeners send the cool pictures. Send the cool videos they've got with their mini DV camcorders.
You'll get that.
And what I would like to do is put together a DVD set of the best stuff and share it with the world.
All right, good enough. All right, hold it right there. Listeners, is what you're going to encounter when we come back. We're going to open the phone lines for Scott Stevens. He's a TV weatherman in Idaho. Now. And he says our weather is being manipulated. No question about it. And in my eyes, I think he's provided the proof. All you've got to do is go and look. If you have questions, it's absolutely incumbent on me to ask at least this before we plunge to the phones. Barry in Los Angeles, California, says what many do. He says, I observe a fiberglass-looking clouds over Los Angeles, resulting from what he says is chemtrail spraying. Even on hot, dry days, when no jet contrails are even possible, who is it spraying, what is being sprayed, and why? First of all, do you believe, Scott, that there is spraying going on in our skies that is not the normal contrail that we all have seen and even admired at times from jet planes, that it's more than that, that it's chemicals?
Boy, Art, I did not want to get into that area at all. Hmm. I really, really, you know, in exploring the weather modification, I didn't want to go there. And then there was one day in August where this big 747 belching just flew overhead, and I've been other planes through the day, but this one was just in your face, and that was it. I had been exposed and had read enough and was familiar enough that I just needed to see one doing it, and I was converted.
And you did.
And I did. And now, I see them all the time.
Do you believe that to be part of weather modification, or is it just an unknown? In other words, you agree it's there, but...
I think they wouldn't be doing it if it didn't have an effect. They wouldn't be doing it if it didn't have some kind of effect in either reducing sunshine.
Point.
It could be warming the planet because we're adding an insulating blanket of cloud cover.
Mm-hmm.
There are multiple things that this could do. And because it's mobile, you can deliver it at certain locations, pre-storm, post-storm, during a storm. I mean, the possibilities are endless with what is capable. And I don't know. You live out west with me.
Mm-hmm.
You know what our blue skies used to be like. I mean, how beautiful it is out here. I mean, weeks on end with just blue, deep blue.
Oh, sure.
Sky, and it doesn't happen anymore. Very few days can I say with certainty in a forecast, sunny. There are not many of those anymore. And I'll even say, and this has become rather blatant since that August afternoon, you know, we'll start with blue skies, and then we'll the contrails will generate high clouds.
Have you said that? Oh, you have?
Oh, of course, because it happens. It happens.
So we'll begin with blue skies, but later this afternoon, folks, the contrails are going to begin forming clouds.
Yep, we'll end up with high clouds from the contrails. You have to say that because that's what we do. We're observers. We observe a science, we describe the process, and infer what's going to happen from that process. And when you see day after day after day after day this process, sooner or later it's going to hit you on the head, and you have to incorporate that in your forecasting.
All right, here we go to the phones. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Scott Stevens. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Art. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning.
Where are you, sir?
I am right down the street from Scott, and Scott and I are in Pocatello, and Scott and I are up way past our bed. I'm on the other side of the camera every evening at 6 and every night.
Listen,
he's a viewer then.
Listen, I zapped out your name. We don't take last names on the air, but anyway, the bottom line is you're a viewer. You watch Scott do the weather.
Yes, and I'm going to open up by saying what I know about the weather is pretty much what Scott tells me at 6 o'clock or 10 o'clock.
Like many Americans, yes.
But I do know a little bit about energy physics, and I'm not disputing anything Scott has said, but I'd like to suggest that if weather is being manipulated on a global scale, the only place you can do that from is space.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do it from Earth. You might be able to use cloud seeding and 747s to change the shape of cloud patterns,
mm-hmm.
Depending on where the chemicals fall. But the manipulation of hurricanes and tornadoes, I mean, I've lived through Great Plains thunderstorms and tornadoes in was on the edge of a hurricane, and the amount of energy you're talking about is just
immense. Unbelievable. Immense.
And and I just don't accept the idea that human technology is currently capable of generating the amounts of energy, either in the shortwave energy area or the longwave energy area, to manipulate those kinds of massive weather patterns.
Well, caller, let me ask you this. Have you had a chance to review the photographs on the website?
I haven't. Unfortunately,
okay. Well, you
I
should. Have. And my question would have been, is there anything other than energy physics that could have caused the squares, the unnatural, absolutely unnatural breaks in giant formations that just simply couldn't be there other than man-made?
Okay, well, this is what I'm getting to, and considering how on the edge this discussion is already.
Sure.
I admit the possibility of straight edges in cloud patterns based on cloud seeding. I could see where that might show up if you did it on a large enough cloud area. On the other hand, the other manipulations I don't see can be generated by human technology. And since I've already said it would have to be manipulated on a global scale from space,
you need to do some research then into the scale
now,
of technology.
Now, well, we're talking. Massive amounts of energy.
Yes.
We are talking chimneys venting this energy in Siberia, and the chimneys, you leave the trail, the condensation trail, to vent this power that run 90 miles long. And this weaponry has been in progress, in development, since the 40s. Basically, the Russians have spent the equivalent of 7 Manhattan projects developing this program. Concurrently with the nuclear program that we've run and they matched as well.
Okay, I first of all agree that these squares and oblongs we see, these totally unnatural slams in weather or effects in weather, it would seem to me that unless there's seeding going on, and that was well pointed out, that could produce, I suppose, that kind of effect, but we know that seeding wasn't going on in these particular cases. Or at least not publicly announced seeding.
At best, we had Hurricane Hunter planes bouncing around and diverted commercial traffic.
Right.
It's a different mindset on what's capable and what is. I think if we were to be able to unfold the portfolio of technology within the variety of nations that we would call the first order of nations, and then look at events that have happened globally over the last 50 years, we would be able to do a lot of, this one did this, and this one did this, and this one did that. But that's still secret.
All right. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Scott Stevens. Hello.
Yes, all right. Great show. And, Scott, I think you're on the money. I believe the weather is being manipulated. I thought it was very interesting that the series of hurricanes over Florida happened right around election time, at which time FEMA came in and offered all of this money to help rebuild, and it looked very good politically. Mm-hmm. But the point that I wanted to make was this. If the weather, in fact, is being manipulated with the scalar wave technology, which some of Art's guests in the past have alluded to,
certainly,
then the question is, if we have that technology, why aren't we not using it to end our own droughts?
Yes,
and if we are not using this technology against ourselves, who in the hell is, and
right.
Can we identify who it is, and can we retaliate?
Right, right. All good questions.
And not even retaliate, but just understand why it's happening. And this stuff has treaties signed by these nations in 1967. You don't sign treaties for something you cannot do.
Oh, that's such a good point. There are treaties about weather control, right?
And what we need...
What do they basically say? That nobody shall try and manipulate the weather for their own ends or whatever?
And what I'm curious about is the verification process.
Yes.
How do you verify this? And is it being done?
Trust but verify. Yes.
So, that's where this needs to be taken next.
Well, your point about the treaties is very good. If something was either not possible already or about to be possible, you certainly wouldn't go to all the trouble of sitting down and hashing out treaties to prevent it. Now, would you?
And that was, what, 37 years ago, 38 years ago?
Point well taken. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Scott Stevens. Hi.
Hi, this is Gary.
Gary, you're going to have to talk up real loud so we can hear you.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yeah, just really get close.
Okay. This is Gary from Hot Springs, Arkansas.
Yes.
This conspiracy theory just blows my mind. You are, I believe, a few months back were complaining about or you were bringing to somebody's attention that you were noticing electromagnetic energy around your own property.
Oh,
remember that story?
Of course. Well, that's still true. That wasn't
right.
Some.
So I say that this electromagnetic problem is all related to those solar flares that we're getting off of the sun, that this planet that is so, you know, energy responsive is getting hit by those solar flares, and that's why we're getting all these anomalies.
All right, let's ask Scott about that. Solar flares and solar activity in general, and the sun in general, affects our weather, right?
What we're doing is adding energy to within the Earth system. That's coming off the sun. How we dissipate that, how we manage that, whether that energy is just left in the ionosphere and so it's incredibly hot all the time, whether this control method, this control that happens, may be absolutely necessary to keep the warming oceans and the attendant weather above it in check. And they're doing all they can to keep it from going even more berserk than it is. That's a possibility, that this is essentially a collar on a system that is about to go crazy because of the warming that is happening and the electricity pouring off the sun and indeed throughout the rest of the planets in the solar system. So
okay,
this may be a control program to keep the weather from going any worse than it is.
All right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Scott Stevens. Hi.
Thanks, Art. Hi, Scott. How you doing?
Hi.
Good. I live here in Pocatello along with you. Did you happen to notice the other day, it was Tuesday, in fact, the skies around 3 o'clock in the afternoon?
Oh, boy. I would need to go back and look through archive pictures.
Okay. Well, what I saw was about six trails. Excuse me, that went through the skies, and I could tell that something was being sprayed because I could see where they started and ended.
Oh, and they started early, didn't they?
They did.
Early,
they did.
Early.
Now, let me throw this situation past you. If you recall, about 4 hours later during that day, they had a very large drug bust
here
in Pocatello that involved several federal agencies. And something that I found was quite strange was that they were going to charge these suspects $4 million.
Oh, that was the potential penalty, wasn't it?
Yes. I wonder if that has any correlation with the chemtrails in the sky and the federal government.
Well,
that's a pretty big connect. How do you make that connection, Paul?
I'm just wondering if that was a precursor to the drug bust. If they were spraying something in the air to manipulate communications.
Oh, I think they own the...
Think that's going a little too far?
Yeah, I think that's a connection that you can't prove.
With different agencies.
I understand people are always looking at this event and that event to try and see if they're connected, but that seems like too much of a...
Yeah. Now, they were... I've set up some time-lapse cameras around the house because I think in understanding how this weather works, you have to be able to speed it up. We step outside, we have... 15 seconds before we get to the car, we may get one glance up. It all looks fine.
Right.
And going back to Tuesday, it was the spraying was impressive. And
you just made an awfully good point, and that is that most of us are on the way out to the car. We look up, and we get a little snapshot of whatever is going on that instant, and then we have to concentrate on traffic or whatever else is in front of us. We're not studying the sky. No. Very few people do that. You do that, Scott.
We are very disconnected from our environment.
It's quite true.
A century ago, we lived off the earth. We died off the earth. We either grew enough food to get us through winter, or we had to know somebody where we could buy it from for those homesteaders, out in the mountains. And we were far more attuned with what was going on in the skies above us. And that's lost.
All right. Good morning. You're on the air with Scott Stevens.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
My name is Jason from Pocatello.
What? Man, do you watch Scott give the weather?
Yes, I do.
You do? I'm getting a lot of your viewers, Scott. Pretty cool. All right, caller, go ahead.
Well, I'm just wondering, you know, first of all, I'd like to say that if people think that, you know, that when you look at some of these picture stuff, if you think that this isn't, you know, man-made, I think that's being pretty naive. I mean, look at some of this. I mean, if...
I agree with you, caller. I'm new to it. You know, I just saw it all for the first time, and it looks man-made to me.
Yeah, nature doesn't just come up with, you know, 90-degree angles like that. So. But one thing I'd like to know is, now that he's opened this can of worms, I'm wondering if any of this is going to have any effect on his, you know, on the way he brings us the weather here in Pocatello now. When he's
That's such a good question.
Well, what I'm going to do...
yes, what are you going to
do? Well, I'm just going to have to point out the oddities. You know, I have, but it's been very subtle up until this point. When a large specific storm is headed into the West Coast, and they're going to turn it, they're going to change directions on it, it'll go into a very severe L shape, and then they'll break the storm. And it's by design. It's just obvious. You can look at the structure of the clouds, again, invisible or even high-resolution infrared imagery, and you can see them. You can see them doing it. And these are things that I'm going to begin to point out, and I expect that other weather people will begin to educate themselves, because I was looking for sources of information so I could have somebody to go to figure this out, and it's not there.
Well, either that or they'll torture you as a cat would torture a mouse. In other words, other weather guys may be more inclined to chuckle at you.
Let them. The audience will view them as fools as time goes on.
Well, it's also nice to know that we don't just have some cat giving us the weather. That
yeah, you apparently have a really gutsy weather person.
Exactly. So we're kind of lucky on that, man.
Obviously you are. I mean, most of them, some of them are very good-looking. The female variety, and you just know they're not out studying the sky,
exactly.
Right?
Well, you know, it's a job I love doing. You know, and
obviously, yes.
I enjoy it. The sky is a great place to. It's different every time you look up, and I think that's what I enjoy about it, is that every day is just a little bit different. We have these long stretches like we're going into in this week out west, where the storms are being split and the drought will go on. The snowpack will continue to be down another 5 or 8% between this week and next week. There just isn't any change. It's status quo.
Well, caller, I bet you'll not be looking at his weather quite the same way ever again as you watch, huh?
No, it's going to be pretty interesting, and I'm glad that we have somebody like that in our town, though.
All right, for you. Thank you very, very much for the call. Wonderful that we've heard from a few people who actually watch you give the weather every night. That's absolutely remarkable. So you think your audience and the management at your TV station is going to be pretty much cool with all of this. Sounds that way, anyway.
If it was not the truth, then there would be problems. But it's the truth, and so we have to ride the wave. And it's going to be a wave. And we've discussed doing or not doing this story, as I talked to our executive producer on Friday.
Oh, I bet.
You know, because they're aware of it. You know, and the photogs come back, hey, Scott, I saw this and that. And, you know...
Scott, hold tight.
Yeah, thank you.
Is there anything that you would like to say to your obviously present TV? Did they know you were going to be on the program tonight?
I had, I think once your producer called me and it was put on your website.
Yes.
I actually got a call from the local paper.
Oh, you did?
Saying, I hear you're going international. And, you know, I give them the forecast anyway. So I shared some pictures with her.
Uh-huh.
And she was like, ooh, curious, and just kind of a little bit of a blurb on what we would be talking about.
Oh, I see. So
I don't know if it ran, though.
Uh-huh.
So, I have enough to read without getting the paper. I'm sorry, guys. But, you know, there's just is too much going on to have to read, you know, mainstream news.
So you may or may not have, there were an awful lot of them here tonight, so I'm guessing they did run it. Or
apparently,
if
you probably have other calls. If three have called, there are likely others.
What is your local paper?
The Idaho State Journal.
The Idaho State Journal?
Yep.
They'll run this.
Okay. And then so will others as the story gets out.
First-time caller line, you're on the air with Scott Stevens. Hello.
Hi, Art. Hi, Scott.
Hi.
I've been listening to your show, Art, for about 5 years. It's a great show.
Thank you.
My question was, before the hurricanes hit Florida, I live in Florida, and before the hurricanes got here, I noticed there was quite a few of the chemtrails up and down the East Coast when the one hurricane turned and went north. And then when Francis and Jean came across the state, there was kind of chemtrails growing from east to west.
My feeling and what's happening is that the environment ahead of a large event like that is seeded. And some of the particles, some of the components of this of these persisting contrails are heavier metals. And these barium and aluminum could be, let's just say, traction for the scalar technology to get a hold of the atmosphere and essentially turn it on, ionize it, and then attract the water molecules, and then just step the storm into wherever they want it to go.
All right, so you are imagining a chemical scalar interaction.
I believe that's a necessity. I truly, it's like adding studs to the snow tire. You just get a little better traction. Because you'll see those thin, wispy clouds with that pale pink and green hue.
Yes.
And then the ripples are there, and the ripples will be in opposing directions. It's just, okay, it's turned on, and it's grabbing a hold of that content first. And the cloud forms first at that layer, and then grows from there. And I'm coming to the conclusion that the spraying is connected to the scalar activity, and it's just, I really want to say that they know what's going on.
You know, I must tell you, Scott, I've suspicioned for a long time this was going on, and I had wondered when somebody like yourself, a weather person, would come forward and say, oh, you're not going to believe what I found.
Yeah.
And here you are,
the
first. Wildcard line, you're on the air with Scott Stevens. Hi.
Hi, Scott.
Hi.
Everything, Scott, that you said, it brought back memories. About 8 or 9 years ago, a coworker who used to go to the shows in America brought back pamphlets about the weather war and that America was having. And it was from other countries, and the North Americans were actually more like the victims.
Mm-hmm.
And they had said that they were using strong electromagnetic waves to hit, you know, like the shorelines, and it was causing a lot of, you know, erratic weather directions and behaviors. And also I wanted to know, my question is, didn't Nicholas Telsa create a rain or a storm in a room?
That's a pretty interesting question. Nikola Tesla did some pretty strange things. We don't know all about them because the government, of course, took a great deal of his research. But do you think he was toying with the powers that perhaps are being used now?
Oh, this is his work. This is his work. I mean, it without question is his work. This is how the first caller, and scratching the head, wondering where the energy is coming from.
Yes.
If Tesla had been allowed over Edison, if Tesla's work had been accepted and ingrained within society, we would be free of oil. We would be free of coal-fired power stations, natural gas, hydroelectric. I mean, the man drove a car without a drop of gasoline for 14 years, for goodness sakes.
All right.
I mean, you could spend $30 million, give $5 million to six universities, let these electrical engineering students go through patents that have already been filed and approved, and then weed out the best ones and then present a plan a few months later on how to solve our energy problems.
All right,
it'd be done.
East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Scott Stevens. Hi.
Good morning, Art. Good morning, Scott.
Hi.
Hi, this is David from Connecticut. I was wondering if you had considered magnetic pole shift, if it had been shifting lately.
Well, we pretty much know when the pole shifts. It wanders a little bit. There have been previous pole shifts and will be more. I'm not sure it relates to the weather question, or does it, Scott?
I don't think it does directly. I think dealing with weather is a surface. It's like changing clothes. And then dealing with a pole shift is something far more internal. Okay. And but still, we're using the planet as a conductor of electricity, of energy, and I don't know exactly how it's going to respond. It may not respond very kindly.
Perhaps not. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Scott Stevens. Hi.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
I'm speaking to you from San Diego on 600 AM COGO.
Yes, sir.
And I want to first commemorate Scott for sticking your neck out. You're going to be in for quite a surprise. And I want to back up your suspicions here that this is definitely something done by man's hand. And I want to point out to you a book that I looked at a few years back. I've been following this subject since it began back a few years ago when Will Thomas was on the air with Art Bell.
Yes.
Perhaps you remember they were discussing taking samples, and they were talking about the sludge that was falling out.
Oh,
and I didn't know what happened with that, but the book that I want to talk about is called A Shield in Space. And it talks about discussions by the Federation of American Scientists.
Mm-hmm.
And they were talking before the chemtrail issue became about public knowledge about doing exactly that. And my suspicions that it is a multi-applicationary purpose seems to be just that. That's why it's hard to identify and put a finger on what it really is and why they're doing it, because it is multi-applicationary, such as controlling the weather, such as controlling communications.
Yes, and our, you can imagine...
they have staff in the aircraft.
Yes, and you can imagine, sir, that our Air Force, our military services would be intensely interested in anything like this. So there would be many hands and many goals.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you would believe that they would be first aware of it, but I guess from Tom Bearden's work, he briefed Reagan in 1984, and Reagan's NSA staff just didn't believe the man.
Right.
And so here we are. It's operational. We've got examples of it. The weather engineering has already begun. That El Nino of 82-83 would have been a year or two in the past, which was an event triggered by this technology, and they're still not believing it happens. So you begin to see how far behind we are, and how it can be asymmetric warfare, where one side overwhelmingly has an advantage. And with this technology, a missile defense system of kill shots where you launch a missile and try to intercept another is just silly. It's just a silly investment. You need to do it electromagnetically like the Russians have.
All right. You're on the air with Scott Stevens. Good morning.
No, there was that, this is Jermaine here in the Sunshine Coast in British Columbia, right?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, there was a question a few calls back regarding the power. I'm surprised you didn't bring up HAARP, but a billion watts at least.
Well, of course, sir, we did bring up HAARP earlier in the program. You may have missed it.
No, well, no, I mean, you had that call regarding the, you know, you were saying the energy had to call, come from outer space.
Yes, there are people who would say a billion watts is a lot of power, and it is as far as man is concerned. Whether it is in terms of affecting the weather or not, I can't answer that question.
Well, and what I'm finding is that there is something like a carrier wave just rolling constantly across the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are smaller interference points where additional waves are introduced, and you get these standing wave patterns. And you can look in the marine layer, the low clouds that are off the California coast.
Yes.
And that's a wonderful test bed because there's no terrain around, no orographic effects, and you're looking for thousands of miles, and you can see this pulsing through the top of that marine layer. And it works from on an angle from west-southwest to east-northeast, and it lifts slowly north. And when storms approach, it changes, and you get deeper cuts, straight lines, parallel straight lines, running hundreds of miles in this marine layer. And it's just it's one area that I watch. It's not impacted by man. Sure, there's some boats out there, but on the whole, this technology controls or does what these clouds want it to do. And think about being able to blanket a whole ocean with low cloud cover. Again, you're retaining heat or holding heat in. Mm-hmm. It's an incredible insulator. So we've got our pulse on the planet and trying to do either disguise warming that's happening much, much faster than is publicly stated, or other just simple control agendas that have nothing beyond terror involved.
A lot of it gets to be sort of a guessing game, I guess,
exactly.
About what we're doing and why we're doing it. What's not so much of a guess is the apparent evidence that you've presented that I think is evidence of absolute tampering. It's simply evidence that somebody's doing something.
Look at a page. Did you still have the site up, Art?
No, not at the moment.
Okay,
But I believe me, I'm convinced.
I was just going to say for the folks, to look at broken clouds, where clouds are simply cut. And they're cut to look normal. Now, you know, it doesn't make sense, but intuitively, it does make sense. And they're look for just bands of clouds where there's just this little thin slice between them. And the clouds are simply broken. And then where the breaks are in the clouds, sometimes the cloud next to it does not line up on the base. Remember, the beginning we talked about this lifted condensation level,
right,
which is the support for the cloud bottoms. And they don't, I mean, the cloud right next to it is maybe 200 feet higher. There's just no natural explanation for this.
All right. First time caller line, you're on the air with Scott Stevens. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, sir.
This is HB from Enid, Oklahoma.
Okay.
And I listen to Oklahoma City to get the weather reports all the time down there.
Right.
All right. On channel, I believe it was Channel 9, mm-hmm. who the weatherman would be Gary England, mm-hmm. and this was last winter. Well, there was a storm coming. It just about gotten to the California coast. So he said the storm will reach Oklahoma, and he said the heaviest amounts will be around Enid and Medford.
Mm-hmm.
Medford's a town about 40 miles from Enid. And I thought, well, the guy's got to be insane. That's 1,500 miles away. It doesn't make any sense.
And now you can't do that. And one of the things...
Possibility.
You just can't forecast. The models may tell you that that's where the bullseye of the snow or the precip is going to be, but I'm to the point now where I just don't trust it. I mean, the storm can be on the doorstep, and I'm still uncertain as to whether it will arrive, hence the square stamped out across the state,
yeah.
where the clouds have just been voided. And it really adds an uncomfortable amount of uncertainty that people count on us. I mean, these are life and death situations sometimes. And they count on us to provide them with accurate, truthful information.
And you're trying your best, but what you're saying is you can't provide that level of accuracy that you're accustomed
exactly.
to providing because of the manipulation.
The certainty has been removed. Yeah,
got it.
Yep.
Wildcard line, you're on the air with Scott Stevens. Hello.
Hello, Art. This is Steve in Kansas City.
Yes.
Hi, Steve. What a pleasure to be on with you and Scott. I can't tell you how many times in the past couple of years I've seen the sky look like an Etch-a-Sketch.
Yeah.
And it has really upset me. A comment and a question. I used to live in Fairbanks, Alaska about 3 years ago.
Oh, how fun.
And I saw a hole in the sky one day where there were clouds all over the valley.
Mm-hmm.
And there was just a perfect round hole in the sky. And I was driving down what they call Farmer's Loop. There was a big dish there. And as we drove past the dish was pointed exactly at that hole.
In the hole.
Hmm.
Curious. Talking about holes in the sky, when you look at the satellite imagery I've got posted, you'll find these holes, and often where there is one, there is another. They're very close together. Fresno, with the fog socked in through the central valleys of California over the past week or so, this persistent hole has opened over Fresno. Why? And I was even reading one of the discussions out of one of the Weather Service offices in Central California.
Uh-huh.
And they even pointed it out. The Fresno hole is back for the third day running.
The Fresno hole.
The next day, it wasn't there. So I have to wonder, because this operation is so immense, whether they are scouring our data and our comments from our agencies in using that in this program. No, it's just with the power of the Internet, information is just here and there in no time at all.
That's fact, isn't it? East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Scott Stevens. Hello.
Oh, yes. Hello, Art.
Hi.
This is Keith in Hamilton, Ontario.
Yes.
In November, I had chemtrails above my house for nearly 2 hours. The sky looked like a football gridiron. I even videotaped it, actually. Is it a normal trait of these to have an orb or ball-like things at the bottom underneath these chemtrails?
Okay. Scott?
That's something that was a surprise for me. And in taking the digital camera out and shooting these trails, is that these orbs would show up. And I'm not the only one to point them out. There's numerous other websites that are focused on that, on those orbs and their possible reasons for being in and around these trails. But I'm not finding them in the pictures around regular commercial flights that are not doing
it. Gotcha. All right. Scott, we're coming to the end of the program. Now, you would like people, if possible, when they, after all, a million eyes in the night and in the day can take pictures of the anomalies that you've described and shown us tonight.
I want to see them.
And you'd like to see the pictures. Where do they send them?
On the website, we've got links, so you can email. I will get a physical address, so if it's on tape or on CD, we'll get a post office box so we can get that. I don't have one right now.
And your goal is to put together a CD, a compilation of what, evidence that you think will prove conclusively?
Well, by the time it's done, it'll be obvious to the world. By the time that's done, because this is going to happen, this is going to be a flash. With the attention that weather has gotten over the last couple of years, this is going to be a flash. And it will change people's awareness. And by the time the DVD is done, it'll be April or May, and it won't be the only one. But that was the intent, was to begin to raise people's awareness.
Well, one thing's for sure. We live in a country where there's a billion digital cameras.
Hallelujah.
Everybody's got one, and nearly. And so I'm sure they're going to come up with these photographs. And they're looking for what? They're looking for squares and oblongs and things that you don't find normally in nature. Is that correct?
They will know when it doesn't fit. It'll be that obvious. It's geometric patterns. It's squares embedded in squares. It's visit the site. Visit my site. And
the site is?
Through it all, weatherwars.info. And you'll begin to see some of what I'm seeing and then apply that. When you're doing the quick walk from the front door to the car, take an extra 15 seconds and just look around.
All right, that's weatherwars.info.com.
No.com, just .info.
Just .info.
Just .info.
Weatherwars.info.
That's
all right, it. Buddy, listen, I want to thank you for being here.
My pleasure.
I guarantee a lot of light bulbs went on out there, including mine. Have a good night.
Thank you.
And good luck. That was quite a brave thing for Scott Stevens to do, a TV weatherman from eastern Idaho, blowing the lid off this whole thing from the high desert this night. You all have a good night and a fair weather day. Tomorrow. Ciao.